Hello, hello. This is Kinnack coming back for the August, now September, Metroplexity podcast. I've got a bunch of questions because we were a bit delayed as a result of house getting broken into and dev laptop getting stolen, which led to a lot of scrambling around to get a new computer, which I'm talking to you on right now, and a new new set of locks and some changes to the back-end security stuff. I mentioned this a little bit in the dev blog, but the there's been they wiped it. I mean, like, in reality, what happened is they stole the laptop, couldn't get into it, wiped it, have resold it already. It's not a big deal. But I went through and did my due diligence and changed all of the back-end passwords so I can't, you know, get into the database or anything. Because, I mean, as unlikely as that is, still doesn't make me feel super comfortable with the idea of just having those passwords wandering around. So, that's all taken care of, which is good. And we had backups and stuff, so all's well. Actually, a special thank you to those of you who helped out with the GoFundMe. Because of that, we are not a, like, $1,000 in debt from having stuff stolen. Which is not a slam on our insurance company. USA has actually done very well by us, but just the nature of insurance is deductibles. I'm actually kind of curious if you could get a zero deductible insurance for that, but that's a whole separate conversation, and you're here to listen to me answer some questions. First up, we've got some from CryptoDynamic. Hey, Kinnick! Hey, Crypto! Since it looks like I'm starting things off, how have things been, and how is Gen Con? Gen Con was actually really weird, but really good. I mentioned a podcast or two ago that I had a cool thing coming out that I couldn't talk about yet. And that actually came out at Gen Con. The more frequent listeners among you probably know that we play a lot of Pathfinder. And I actually did some contract work for Paizo, the publishers of Pathfinder, doing a couple of, like, micro-adventures for them, basically. And those were premiered at Gen Con. So there was a lot more, like, you know, networking type stuff, and seeing just, like, how the adventure played in the wild, which is a very interesting sort of experience. Even more so than, like, I've obviously watched people play Metroplexity before, and Twilight Heroes and so forth, but with an RPG, a tabletop RPG, there's an added step of the GM's interpretation of the text. And I guess actually another extra step in there, because the developers at Paizo obviously, like, polished everything and made some actually really cool changes that I appreciated a lot. But I got to play through one of them and talk to GM, who had run a ton of them, and sort of, like, get his rundown on how things have gone. So that was really cool, and hopefully I'll be doing some more work with them in the future. But yeah, it's Honor's Echo is the name of the set of quests, and I did the first two, Grove and Basilica, which also got the in the review section on Paizo, which is Pyzer.com is the only place you can get them. It's their Pathfinder Society stuff is basically strictly download. It's possibly you can get them on DriveThruRPG, but I think it's just Pyzer.com. On the review section for the Pathfinder Society adventures are a lot more blunt, I would say, typically, than their other stuff. Like the rules material and the home adventures, the people reviewing them are usually like, I mean, the people buying the products, which means, I mean, GMs for the home adventures, the Adventure Path line, and for the larger rules books, it's like, oh, this was cool, this was less cool, I was, you know, excited about this, disappointed about this, and you get a very, like, usually pretty nuanced reviews. They have a good set of reviewers there, just as far as the community goes. And the Pathfinder Society ones are, I mean, there are still a lot of good nuanced reviews, but there's also a lot of them that are like, you know, these jerks totally killed my character. And apparently I killed a bunch of people's characters. Which is not optimal. Like, it's definitely not what you're trying to do, but it's sort of, I mean, you know, it's like, oh, sorry, but at the same time, I mean, low-level adventures in Pathfinder, and there are some legitimate complaints there, but it's very, very easy for the dice to go one way or another with low-level adventures in Pathfinder. But other than that, other stuff that happened at Gen Con, we brought a new person from our gaming group to Gen Con for the first time. She had a really good time. She sort of like went through the entire events catalog and like decided to do a bunch of things. So we went with her to a bunch of stuff that we wouldn't normally go to, which was very cool. Got to eat some good food. I love the food here in Columbus, but Indianapolis also has some tasty, tasty food. While we were engaging in our post-con meat hosing, which is to say Brazilian steakhouse, churrascaria. Brazilian barbecue, I guess they usually call it. Is that right? Anyway, churrascaria. it was, of course, filled with Gen Con people, because it's more or less right across the street from the convention center. And, like, the person at one of the people at the next table was showing their waiter something on their phone, and I glance over, totally showing, you know, them in the process of trying to catch a blast. So everybody at our table, you know, pulls their phones out and starts trying to catch the blastoise. And, I mean, maybe we should have stood on the table and yelled so everyone knew, but, you know. So I guess, yeah, we have been playing Pokemon Go. I guess I've been playing a responsible amount of Pokemon Go. Puyo has been playing a even more responsible amount of Pokemon Go. Like, she's been getting so much exercise. It's like, oh, hey, I've got like 3 hours. Let me go on like a 3-hour bike ride and hatch a bunch of eggs. So, yeah. So that's fun. Puyo also came with us to Gen Con with Liz and I. And I think she had fun. It's always kind of hard to tell with Puyo. She's very easygoing, so even if something is terrible, she'll usually, you know, be fine. She got a bunch of sweet chitinous jewelry, I suppose you could say. Some cool spider themed and one stag beetle themed jewelry. The stag beetle, like, she just loves spiders in general. It's not coincidental that spiders are sort of a running theme in Metroplexity, because it's very easy to get her to draw spiders. But the stag beetle is apparently there's a really cool stag beetle Decepticon in, is it More Than Meets the Eye? The current-ish CGI Transformers series. Anyway, I don't think it's More Than Meets the Eye. I would have to look it up. Since you brought it up, got anything to say about the upcoming Unearthly Item, or the current one, if it's out by the time this is answered? It is out, and I hope that people are enjoying it. It's a pretty weird one, to be fair. There's a lot of content there, and just due to the nature of the item, like, it'll be dripping out pretty slowly. But I think that it's... I don't think it's something that will appeal to everyone, but I think that the people who do enjoy it will be pretty into it. Like, it's pretty pretty low maintenance, all told. Aside from the Unearthly Item, anything you'd care to share that you're currently working on for Metroplexity? I'm still sort of just getting my feedback underneath to some degree. The two big things upcoming on my plate, and by big I actually mean fairly small, are a titles system, which has been requested a lot, and that'll include both some basically like avatars, like some unlockable titles, and some and a way to get custom titles through Zach, and so that'll be cool. Hopefully that's coming up in the next, you know, couple of weeks, sort of thing. Also planning on doing some work on the Southside quest, because there have been a couple of pretty good suggestions recently that I want to go in and make that a little I'm not sure exactly how to say it. Make it a little more forceful, I guess. Like, there's a point where you can just sort of, like, be spinning in circles. And that's fine on a whole, but I'd really prefer that not happen on the first quest. So I'd like to sort of patch that up, and I'd like to, there's some actual, there's some mechanics in Southside that don't exactly match the fiction, and I would like to fix that. Because, I mean, the mechanics, to a large extent, are how we share in the fiction. So, I'd like for that to be all accurate and squared away. I might do those at the same time. I might have to do those as two separate updates. Neither of them should be particularly large. Are we missing something cool? Because we haven't figured out how to pin jellyfish down for the moodlight glove. That's a good question. I mean, jellyfish are pretty cool. I'm not sure if there even is a way to pin them down. I'm sort of trying to dig that code back up real quick here so I can see. Okay, that wasn't helpful. So, yeah, the computer situation with the replacing them, we have, I mean, obviously, I guess I shouldn't even say obviously, but we have backups, which is good. I'm very pro-backup, as it turns out, and that has served me well in life and in this particular instance. Actually, I guess it hasn't honestly really come up all of that much, but that would have been a giant pain if we hadn't had backups. So it's come in really handy, you know, that once. Let's see. Actually, it looks like there might be a little error here. Not anything. There's actually quite a bit of stuff going on at the jellyfish. One of which, one of which was sort of broken and should become pretty obvious next time you see a jellyfish. And one of which was, I believe, available and just hasn't been discovered. Let me, let me get this uploaded, actually, so I don't, you know, forget. Or there might have been something that was available and I just broke it in some weird way, but I don't think so. Alright. Well, the mood like love may have just gotten better. Any hints about what might happen this year's Halloween? This year's Halloween, I have been starting to think about it. One of the benefits of not having a computer for a while is I sort of got to dig into the thought size of things. It will probably be in Old Town again. Mechanically, I think some of the underlying stuff will be pretty similar. Not 100% sure where in Old Town it's going to be yet. How much... I mean, like, we could have a pretty close replay of last year's, and that would... There's actually some really interesting stuff that could happen with that. Or we could, you know, move it across the street. Yeah, I think that, there's definitely some interesting stuff that can go into it. It's largely a question of how much energy I have to pour into it, because with every Halloween, it's like if I had infinite energy, like I could, you know, create this grand structure of Halloween. With hundreds of variables and crazy branching options, but at the same time, if I had, I guess, not truly infinite energy, but an incredibly large amount, like, it would still be, to a large extent, better used on other things. So there's always that sort of balance. It's like, I have ideas that I could, I mean, basically be working on from now until Halloween Day, if not longer, going full out, but A, I would crash and burn through all of November if I did that, and B, like, there's a balance that I have to maintain there of, you know, how much it's worth putting in, that temporary, like, cool temporary content, and I like having some of that, but, you know, sort of goes back and forth. But yeah, there's a potentially, depending on how things turn out, a lot of different interesting conflicts that, even if I don't have, you know, a giant amount of energy that is worth putting into it, at least we'll be in a sort of a little bit of a different direction. Not totally dissimilar from Old Town, but a little bit different from the campus ones. And I think that should be cool. I'm pretty happy with how the idea part of it is going, at least. Is it in fact possible to pull a rabbit out of the trick top hat? That is another excellent question. Oh, man. I feel like probably not, but I mean, it is sort of, it seems like something that I would do. I don't think so. I would have to do a lot of digging, because that's another one that has sort of have vanished a little bit into the mists of time. I think there's... I remember there being some really cool stuff going on with that from a design perspective, but I'm not sure if any of that really cool stuff takes the form of rabbits. Couple questions from Goldess. Is there any Metroplex Day content we haven't found yet? Most of the Metroplex Day stuff is pretty... I don't really want to say, I mean, in your face, because, like, the discovery of, like, the Twisting Serpents and stuff is sort of, interesting process that took a while. But I think things are have been pretty well mapped out, and I haven't added a ton of really secretive stuff of late. So, like, there's definitely some stuff that people have found, but I'm pretty sure people have been staying on top of that. What's the deal with those darn dorms? You know, contractors. Are we missing anything big with the glowing bauble or jar of poison? I seem to remember that there's some pretty cool glowing bauble stuff that folks may not have found. The jar of poison is fairly straightforward. I mean, there's obviously some interesting, you know, interactions with that quest, but I don't think I ever visited the jar of poison to add anything new to that. And it's, I mean, a pretty old item. So I would expect everything there to be pretty found. The point I'm making with calling it old is, for the most part, the older stuff, I mean, I sort of have built up a, you know, array of tools as I've moved forward. So a lot of the older stuff is just a little bit simpler. So it's either the older stuff tends to be either pretty straightforward and figured out, or like the first place where I find a given tool, and sometimes that's, there's sort of a question when you're hiding things of, you know, you don't want to be too obvious, but you can also definitely be too obscure. And the early ones that are too obvious have just sort of like, well, they're just obvious, they've just become part of the game's, you know, mythos, right? And the ones that I went too far in the other direction, however, a lot of those are just, you know, I mean, it's entirely possible there's some of them that I've completely forgotten, but I know that, just off the top of my head, there are at least a few that are pretty early in the game's development that are just, like, very well hidden. And I make a point sometimes to, you know, go back and add a little, you know, extra sweetener to those, just, you know, so that when someone finally does, you know, crack that pinata open, that they get, you know, an appropriate amount of candy. Some questions from Al. How's the laptop door recovery situation going? Sorry to hear about that. I got my new laptop in yesterday. I think it was yesterday. It might have been Thursday. Which, ironically, hasn't helped with this process, because... okay. Backing up. So, on August 31st, which you may not know is my birthday, we were out having delicious ramen. I fucking love ramen. We have actually a couple of rather good ramen places in town, which is not surprising if you know Columbus, but is probably pretty surprising if you think of it as, like, a random Midwestern city. Like, Midwestern cities are not exactly known for their awesome ramen places. We're out having delicious ramen, and we got back, and someone had broken in through our back door while we were gone. We were gone for, like, an hour, maybe, in, like, broad daylight, because we were going out for lunch, and had grabbed, basically, they grabbed basically everything that they could find that had a screen and was carryable, if that makes sense. So they grabbed, like, four laptops, a couple of DSs, not the games, for whatever reason, a really old Nook, like, one of the old, like, E-Ink ones, which I much prefer, but it's neither here nor there, thankfully. We were able to replace that, despite those. I don't think they make them anymore, but we were able to get one off at Amazon. Wii U gamepad, which is annoying for a couple of reasons. One of them being, like, it's not actually our Wii U, like, we're borrowing it from a friend of ours. And the other thing is, the Wii U gamepad is actually, like, integrated with the system way more than, like, the Wii remotes or, you know, normal controllers. So that was Liz yesterday calling Nintendo to get on their side of things, by the way. Their customer service is apparently amazing, but they got the DS account squared away and got the new Wii U controller sent down, and all of that. Anyway, moving forward. So they stole a bunch of stuff. They shoved it in one of our reusable bags. Ran off. Very shortly before we got home, I think, because they were also smoking in our house. This will tell you a little bit about my personality. I'm not... You've probably gathered from the fact that, like, I'm running these games and not making, you know, $50 an hour programming for some company somewhere, that I'm not, like, huge on, like, material possessions. But it was very much like, ah, it's like, that's going to be really, you know, inconvenient, slow down development, basically. Like, the laptop's going away. And, like, glad that they didn't take our local backup disk, because that would just be, it's way more convenient to restore from that, etc., etc. But it's like, they took my favorite reusable bag, which pisses me off, and they were smoking in the house while they were stealing stuff. And that just annoys the shit out of me. So, like, just, you know, the little things that get you, I guess. But anyway, yeah, so we, it actually took a while for us to figure out everything that they had, stolen. Because, like, the Nook, like, we didn't realize until I, like, sat. I was like, oh, well, we don't have any laptops, I can't do anything, but, like, I'm in the middle of this book, and I sit down, and it's like, oh, the Nook's gone, too. So, yeah, that was... Anyway, that's the backstory. Put up a GoFundMe, and some folks from Project Steam, Wild Heroes, some, you know, family and friends, people who Liz knows through work, some people who I used to work with years ago when I was still working at Totally Not Midgard, all chipped in, which was phenomenal. And we were able to cover the deductible on the insurance, and USAA was not jerks about anything. They gave, actually, legitimate, replacement cost for all of the items that were stolen. The deductible is just the nature of the beast, but, they didn't step us on anything, is the moral of the story. So we were able to get me and Liz both a new laptop. Also, a friend of ours during our downtime without the laptops was like, hey, doesn't matter, a friend of ours. and gave me an old desktop, an old Mac desktop that it wasn't using. And that is actually what I'm talking to you on right now, because got a new MacBook, which do not have USB ports, which I did not even think of. I'm sure I'll be able to do this eventually, but I'm going to need a USB headset or one that plugs into headphone jacks or something like that. But it was just how do I plug anything into this? But the new laptop is actually very nice. The one of the nice things with if you have insurance that's paying replacement cost rather than current market value, I forget what the terminology they actually use is. It's we had 4 MacBooks stolen, including one that actually we did not even own. Which was partially covered by the owner's insurance, because it's Liz's work laptop, and so it's actually owned by the company that she's working for. Non-profit company, I guess, technically. but, anyway, they give you, okay, you get the amount that it costs to buy a new MacBook, because you can't, rather than getting, the current market value for the laptop. So, the new MacBook, setting aside the USB port question, solid-state hard drive, which is really nice, and, of course, just, a new, clean computer, a little bit more RAM, stuff like that. So that's nice. There was sort of, a bit of an upgrade there. And the desktop's working pretty well, too. It just took a long time to get it squared away. And set up properly, because there was a bunch of, we didn't know if we were going to be keeping it at first, so, sort of trying to do, a partial restore from the backup disk, and nothing's actually working right, because there's all this other software that's already installed on it, etc. Sort of a mess, but, it's working now. A new laptop is working great. Liz's new stuff, to the best of my knowledge, is working great. New Nook came in. At least one of the... I don't know if we actually got... I think we just ended up getting one new DS, because there was no reason to have two of them. We don't actually both play them. It's really just Liz rocking the Fire Emblem and Portable Legend of Zelda games, but the new DS just came in, which... I don't actually know if it's a... Well, it's not a new DS, it's a refurbished DS, but I don't know if it's a refurbished 3DS or a refurbished new 3DS, because Nintendo can't name things. Everyone's been fucking fantastic, and the locks is sort of a very slight sticking point in that we... so the locks were not, broken during the break-in, they just brick window and reached through and opened it, basically. But we would like to have better locks to go along with our new, you know, better door, et cetera, et cetera. And but because the locks were broken and no keys were stolen, like if keys are stolen, you can apparently, the insurance will pay for it, whatever. So that's an added cost, which we've been able to soak between the insurance and the GoFundMe and stuff like that, and a little bit of out of pocket, but it's one of those things where, I mean, we went from being like many thousands of dollars down to between GoFundMe and USAA and so forth being basically square, which is good. Very good. It means I do not have to go out and start making coffee beverages for people, which I'm a big fan of. Speaking of jobs, I'm not sure if I'm technically allowed to announce what Liz will be doing, but she is going to be starting a exciting new job shortly. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. So I guess we can talk more about that later. Do you have any aggregate this is back to Al's questions. Do you have any aggregate data about how far people get into Quest before getting stuck? Can you tell if there's any specific point where new people don't come back? I mean, the data exists. I don't currently have, like, a report I've run on it or anything like that. I should. I mean, that's something that you should do. It's just not something that I have done. there's sort of a... There are a couple of points where I've done some like sort of time based studies rather than specifically where in quests, which would be relatively easy for me to get a hold of because the quest statuses are obviously tracked in a very granular fashion. But yeah, that's the thing that I should data out. But yeah. In Novos, there are some actions explicitly display their unsubtle. What are your thoughts about making those show for all sources of unsubtle? I don't really like it, I guess. There's a certain point where it starts to get really cluttery. And the actual number that you're looking for at the end is the amount, you know, of alert that you've gotten. And so it would largely be like, you know, displaying like the enemy's power with every attack. And or like because it isn't quite like it isn't quite like a normal combat where there's actually like, I mean, obviously there's a bunch of stuff that gets added together, but the final jump from, there's a jump from unsubtle to alert rather than like each individual one going, like power to damage. And so there's like, you get, you know, five different damage numbers, and those are like meaningful numbers by themselves. The unsubtle numbers aren't actually that meaningful by themselves. Like, it's just when they become alert and they all get into a big pile and then become alert as one. So I don't think that that necessarily adds a lot to the conversation, personally. I don't want to break it down individually for each source for a couple of different reasons, because that would screw up how, like, Incognito works and stuff like that. So I'm pretty pleased with that the way that is. Looking for missing Old Town skills. Is there anything that rolled initially with Old Town that got new functionality added, or are the undiscovered skills all from new stuff? I believe there's some of both, if I'm parsing that correctly. There are some stuff that I was like, oh, that should really grant skill, that went in. There's some that was like, oh, there's this cool idea for a skill. Let me, you know, put in the support for it. I actually missed a question. What's the deal with rats? There's some vague hints that they don't get along with the Fae. Will we see any rat leaders or colonies to explore? actually, surprised that you don't see more rats in the game. Like, there are, I guess, the majority of the rats in Metroplex are not really going to give you a lot of problems, is the big difference. That said, like, you should probably have more of them just, like, in the background as world building. I would be... Rats are with spiders on the list of things that's really easy to get Puyo to draw. Puyo loves rodents. Basically all rodents. Like, it's, like, mice, rats, hamsters, I mean, whatever. So, yeah, there's... Well, like, the, the... bipedal rat. Bipedal. I'm not actually sure how that's supposed to be pronounced. Rat in, the puzzle dungeon, is loosely inspired by her, her Pathfinder character in our current, Reign of Winter game. So, yeah, rats, Puyo hearts rats is the moral of the story. So we've got, hopefully we'll see some more of that in the future. And as far as their relationship with the Fae, I wouldn't say that it's nearly as toxic, haha, pun, as, our favorite, singing aquatic life. But there's certainly some back and forth between the Fae and other, you know, subterranean, species, if you want to call them species. I've always wondered if we would see crazy etheric plant creatures, but the Misty offices answered that. Are there any etheric creature types or ecosystems we expect to see or you would like to add? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that, both in the sense that, I mean, there's just potentially a lot of etheric creatures. Like, there are only a few that sort of spread their tendrils, widely, like the Fae, that we were just talking about. But there's also, a lot that are more one-off, that I'd like to show more of. Like the presence in Southside Park, the various golems are sort of a unique case. I mean, they're sort of their own separate thing. But I'd like to show off. The Valentine Killer, Force Beast, things like that. Like, there's some sort of, they're not necessarily all like boss level per se, but there's a lot of unique individual entities, and there's at least one, like, there's a couple of major etheric things that you still haven't gotten to see. I'm not sure, like, the biggest one, I'm not sure if I'd consider it an ecosystem exactly, but yeah, there's quite a bit going on. And I think you... Yeah, there's some weird stuff. I'm sure that shocks you deeply. A couple questions from Penguin Pyra. Terrible Bindings is pretty well spaded out, as we've killed nearly every monster with it. Any secrets still lurking beneath its innocuous facade? Anything to do with binding humans? It definitely does have sort of limitations on what it can bind, and those follow follow its own sort of internal logic, which I'm not sure if it entirely makes sense or not, but that's fine, as long as it seems consistent to me. But I would be surprised to find it binding humans. I would not be entirely surprised to find it binding things that look like humans. What happened to the 20th century music by the time of Metroplex D? Is 80s rock considered classic music at this point? Would people think I'm a dinosaur if my character made references to contemporary music? This is sort of an interesting question. I think that I think that sort of gets into a question of how music is working now. Because we're sort of, like, if we, you know, take our points of, like, you know, the, you know, say, like, 50s, 80s, now, and then sort of project that line outward, right? If you look at, I mean, the 50s, you have not really not a homogenous music culture, but I mean a very radio-driven music culture. Sort of all of the interesting backroom dealings that sort of implies. I think you have the variety shows by then, too. Don't actually quote me on that. My remembering what goes in which decade is not necessarily my strength, but around there, at some point between there and the 80s, you get sort of the variety show era, which has sort of died off by the 80s. The 80s you're looking at, I mean, you still have that sort of radio dominance. You're starting to see a lot more variety in, you know, personal listening with, you know, tapes and 8-tracks and all of that. But then you make the jump forward to today, and I mean the 50s and 80s, like, as far as, like, the actual, like, way that music is working, I think are not super dissimilar. I mean, there's definitely some changes between, like, you know, records and so forth, and different medium, but you look to now, I mean, we have just this vastly different music ecosystem compared to even, like, the, you know, 90s to a large extent. I mean, even to some degree, the aughts. I would say the aughts are closer to us than anything else, which is reasonable, being the previous decade and all that. But we have this, I mean, really, like, increasingly fragmented fan base, and so much, I mean, you know, quote, on-demand media, and even, like, I mean, looking at, I mean, you've got, like, services like Pandora and Spotify, you've got a lot of people that just get their music watching, like, videos with that music on YouTube. I guess there's a new, you know, YouTube music app they're trying to push, which may or may not become a thing. And it's become much more insular to a large extent, where, I mean, like, everybody sort of was exposed to a large extent to the same music through the 80s, and now you have, certainly there's still some, like, superstars and stuff, but if you're into, you know, a specific thing, you can really get, like, a very specific thing at, you know, your fingertips, and, you know, either, you know, buy it by the track, or listen to it for, you know, support it through ads, or just ad block and listen to everything for free, whatever. Projecting that forward, if instead of going all the way to, like, Metroplex's time, let's stop, like, another, you know, 30 years, 2040s, if we've got sort of my generation that grew up in the 80s and 90s, have a common cultural identity that is largely, like, that even for people like me who gave no fucks about music, basically, when I was growing up, have some, you know, touchstones with that music, and also some sort of, like, interesting little things that people in, I guess, so from the 80s to now, you've got this sort of core cultural identity that I think if you move from the, you know, teens to the 40s, you're going to see that fuzz out a lot. There's going to be a much stronger subcultural component to that, I feel like. So people, and, yeah, just continuing that forward, I think that that will largely continue to happen, that we'll see people with less, that sort of the oldies will be, might actually remain in the radio era longer than we think. I'm not sure if that will be until Metroplexity comes around, because that's more like, you know, 60, 70, 80 type years, but so I think that it would not surprise me if there was still a disproportionate amount of 80s music in, like, the 2040s, as opposed to, like, the 50s music we're seeing now. I mean, there's a little bit of that influence still, but not, I think that the 80s might carry over better just because there's such a, things are becoming so individualized. Now, specifically, talking about, like, picking that up from, like, our recent future to, like, Metroplexity, there's there are some strong cultural forces in Metroplexity's time that we do not have now, which I basically mean Omnitech, Zaibatsu, and the smaller corporations like Midgard. So I would, particularly Zaibatsu, is very conscious of creating that sort of cultural identity as a touchstone for its customers, so that they can, sell them their nostalgia back, and so that there's always, something new coming out for them to peddle to everyone and to do cross promotions with. So I think that as you get closer to Metroplexity's time, that sort of fuzziness that I was talking about start actually sliding back in, and you'll see a little bit more of a generational scale, particularly in Zaibatsu held territories for sure, Omnitech territories to a lesser extent, but even places like Metroplex, you'll get the edges of Zaibatsu influence regardless of what Midgard tries to do, but also the stuff that Midgard is pushing will sort of, their year-to-year corporate agenda is to a large extent the history of, at least the recent history of Metroplex. So that sort of creates a foundation, and Midgard isn't super into music or anything, but there's a lot of what they're pushing out requires, ad campaigns and stuff, and those will necessarily have that sort of effect, which I think is one of the things that is overlooked when you're talking about what the youngest generation now is going to see, is going to sort of be like moving forward. And obviously there's possibility of a lot of crazy shit happening that will define their generation in various ways, whether that be another great war, global warming finally slapping us in the face, whatever. But if things just continue apace, there's the rest of the generations we really have around right now, a lot of the sort of memes that those of us from those generations sort of latched onto are actually sort of, a lot of those are driven by commercials, particularly if you look back more before the internet, or if you know people who are not the internet-ish. Go on Facebook, if you have relative who is older than you who's posting Minion memes all the time, that is, the Minion movie had one of the largest advertising blitzes of all time, and that has, more than any success or failure of the movie or whatever, has created this sort of cultural imprint, and that as much as jingles and stuff, right? And those are as sort of prominent musically as the stuff that listening on the radio, and as the radio sort of went away first to some extent, you still had that sort of advertising stuff. But when you're talking about people growing up now, particularly if their parents know enough to put ad block on everything, which, by the way, like, you know, support the sites you go to, leaving on ad block, all, like, obviously I don't run ads, so it's, I don't have an actual horse in this race, but if you actually like and use a site, turn off ad block for that site. If they're just jerks or whatever, I mean, fine. But for parents, for sure, like, there's something to be said for turning on ad block on everything so your kid isn't exposed to a bunch of advertising and pestering you for a bunch of crap. I feel like it's hard to argue with that. But it's sort of an interesting question of, like, you know, how spread out that sort of, that culture and those memes are going to be, like, especially as people, I mean, like, childhood programming, there's only a limited number of things, but as people sort of start getting out and developing their own interests and making their own choices, like, I think you'll see an increasingly fragmented society. But, yeah, anyway, that went off on a huge tangent. Yeah, I think that it would not be super weird to drop 80s references, but only, like, the very dankest of 80s references, because most of that stuff's going to be forgotten, like, even a lot of the really good stuff. But there will definitely be some that, like, eventually lapsed into the public domain, you know, more than likely because, you know, the company that owned the rights went out of business rather than getting absorbed by a larger corporation, that sort of thing. And it wouldn't surprise me to see a lot of, like, art projects and things like that using music that's actually more around our time than things that are still locked down by corporations that are still in existence and might sue you. Whew! Okay. It seems the unlocking masterful code of surgery either requires many separate factors in unison or just a lot of hacking and grinding to be done. Or am I totally off base? I would say it's closer to many separate factors in unison. I don't actually think it's particularly grindy. Like, I think it's not an easy thing to get everything to line up, and you might have to try a lot of times to get it all to line up, but yeah. Any thoughts towards limited time events integrated with gang warfare? It seems like hacking has gotten a lot of fingers in MenPies recently, and the PvP scene has been a bit stale. Do you believe the Old Town PvP zone will revive the PvP scene? I mean, there is some degree of integration I do like to do with that. It varies, obviously, a lot from event to event, what's appropriate and not. As far as whether Old Town will, I mean, revive is a totally separate question. I mean, it's not going to, like, utterly change how PvP works or anything. That's just another zone with its own set of quirks. But, I mean, having another opening might shake things up a bit. It seems available stealth techniques very heavily favor the lower chain positions. Any more lurking on the higher chains? Any hints on how to get a hold of them, especially the coveted chain 8 slot? They're definitely do lean more than I would like towards the lower numbers, so I've been thinking about that some. There are some sort of cheaty ranged techniques in there too that are sort of stealth-ish. I'm pretty sure there's an 8. Nope, not currently any 8 stealths, but there are some other higher number ones. I mean, the stealth ones that show up tend to be a little on the trickier side. But it would behoove me to add some more higher chance stealth, just so that you don't have everything crammed into the lower end of the chain scale. Some questions from Arcane. Hello, Kinnick. It's been a while. Hello, Arcane. Let's see what these fine gentlemen rolled out. We have some construction folks. Would you like to congrats Gold S for something? Gold S generally does a pretty good job of just, like, steadily reporting a bunch of bugs. Let's see. Looks like most recently prevented personal trees from watering off when you uninstalled them from your apartment, which is pretty nice. It's entirely possible there is some awesome other stuff in-game that I've not seen. Any updates to the potential iOS port? That is definitely something that I would still like to do. It's largely a question of time and energy to learn Swift and get actually good at it, as opposed to other things. Or just giving up on the app side of things and just making a very drastically different mobile-friendly site. And I'm not... That sounds like a giant pain. Like, I know that that's a giant pain. Like, just a tremendous amount of work. But the Swift stuff, it's like, I'm not sure if that will be better. It might be every bit as bad, in which case, I mean, like, I'm sort of trying that to see if it's going to be any better. If it is, fantastic. If it isn't, ugh, that's a lot of, that's a lot of, ugh. From what I understand, the big thing about Novos was to better integrate hacking into the general Metroplex experience. Now that it's basically completely rolled out, are there any Novos solutions, route, priests, lags, quests? That is a damn fine question. It would make, I mean, some amount of sense for that to start showing up in the university quest, actually, which I hadn't really thought about a great deal. I will actually just make a note for myself to think about that. I'm looking at the pictures again. The one of the OmniTech worker, he's so unhappy looking. Why is he so unhappy? I mean, he is very grumpy, isn't he? I would suspect because he is doing a job that is only still being done by him rather than a drone, because he is actually cheaper than the drone. Then they can treat him more harshly than they would, you know, an inanimate object. So, his working conditions and interactions with management are probably enough to turn his smile upside down. In real life, aka America, aka the USA, aka Merca, construction companies have strong ties to the mafia. Can we expect some similar tie-in in Metroplex? There is definitely some mafia connection with actually specifically the construction in Old Town. And that's actually one of the handful of things that I'm like, I should really get that sort of in there at least a little bit before Downtown goes in, because Downtown, along with several other organizations, is like, you know, Midgard and so forth, is where sort of the strongest mafia presence is in Metroplex. And so having it would be nice to have that sort of, you know, connection before you head in there and have to, you know, deal with them in person. A podcast or two ago, you said that for a special occasion you would lay down the Eggman mask. I feel like that was a wasted opportunity on my part. I expect no special considerations here, but allow me to ask one question I would have asked then. How would you describe your hopes and dreams? Wow. I mean, I guess I don't have to go full-on Eggman for that one. Although, admittedly, I'll probably still sound Eggman. I mean, in a broader sense than the game, and I feel like I talk about my hopes and dreams for the game pretty frequently. I am... I'm a man of simple needs in a lot of ways. I really want to be able to, I mean, just continue designing games and, you know, keep roof over my head and food in my stomach. And that's really kind of it. Like, obviously, like, I mean, there are other needs that I have, but they are being pretty well fulfilled. Like, I have an amazing spouse, adorable kittens. Admittedly, one of my hopes or dreams is that they keep feeling okay. So we've got Tiff and Zoe, and Zoe is sort of our fluffy princess kitten, and she's sort of more my cat. She's getting on in the years, but Tiff is our, you know, wobbly, loving cat, and he's also getting on in the years, and he has, actually, I think I've probably mentioned this before, because you probably hear him sneezing on a previous podcast, but he has feline immunodeficiency virus, which is basically kitty AIDS, and so he's been sort of, he's just sort of always sick now. And, like, he got really bad for a while, and we, dosed him to the gills with antibiotics, and he's doing better, but not good, and it's sort of like he's just never probably gonna actually be good again. So, yeah, I hope that he, you know, does okay, and that when he finally goes, that it's not like a horrible process. But yeah, I mean, there's a large list of like projects that I would like to do. Part of the reason that I'm learning Swift is to see if it works for Metroplexity and Twilight Heroes. But I'd also like to do an actual SwiftGay-based iPhone game with Puyo that she's wanted to do for a while and I've wanted to do for a while. Sort of the very, very indirectly answering the requests for romantic paths in Metroplexity, in that it's not actually related to Metroplexity at all. Like, there aren't any, like, NPCs crossing over or anything, but it's very much a, I mean, sort of westernized dating sim, basically. And I think that not only as, like, a design project is it going to be fun, And I've done some, done a little bit of groundwork, but as a cultural thing, it feels like something we need to eventually get around to doing on several levels. And there have been a couple of stabs at that, but I've not really been happy with any of them. And I'd like to, do more stuff with Pathfinder. I've done, some stuff for Paizo, a little bit of stuff for third parties. But I'd like to, keep that up. I would like to eventually do some role-playing or setting book, or if Puyo decides that she's up for drawing way too much, manga for Metroplexity and possibly Twilight Heroes. Yeah, I very much have a... There's sort of the... The big thing I want to do, I don't want to say forever, but, literally, basically for as long as I can remember. And by the basically there, I actually mean I'm pretty sure before I can remember, I wanted to develop games as, my thing that I do. Most of my hopes and dreams are actually, doing pretty good on that front. That's sort of where I'm at. That said, there's a bit of an open question. Liz moves between jobs. Our financial situation right now, to be in totally not vague man mode, is, Liz brings home the bread, and I can pay myself a little bit out of Metroplexity, but not, anything that even, if I were not self-employed, I couldn't legally pay myself this little, for the amount of work that I do. I'm paying myself a way below minimum wage. There's a question of, as her situation changes, as she moves between positions, how sustainable that remains. That and hopefully the eventual ability to, do advertising and stuff, will lead to some considerations of, is there something we can do through, Patreon or GoFundMe, which admittedly I'm kind of harding right now because they helped us out so much with that, or whatever, is there some other revenue stream that we can crack open to maybe, whether it's funding those other projects or just doing something different with the way that Metroplexity is funding itself, so that I can sort of keep up with any changes that happen. At the moment, it looks like the worst possible case is probably just that I do more freelance projects. There are some freelance projects that I'll basically do as hobbies, stuff that I do anyway, the Pathfinder stuff. I'm not doing that for money. I do get paid. That's something you do because you love it, not because you're getting paid. But outside programming projects, most likely what that'll take the form of, but, the more time I'm spending on stuff like that, and more importantly, the time, the more, emotional energy I'm spending, if I have to, spend a day dealing with, people whining about, like, you know, whatever they're looking for. Whatever. I mean, you know, like, oh, your code is terrible, or like, oh, we have this list of requirements that's completely unreasonable, or whatever. Like, that can... I mean, that takes a lot out of you, and that, I mean, I would rather not have that impact the game, but, I mean, if push comes to shove, and, you know, food needs to be put on the table. It's, I mean, food needs to be put on the table, right? Let's touch base on some old friends. The Hammer and the Weird Mutated Sun Guy of the Bum King. Both said, in specific circumstances, they come at a time of need. Is the time at hand, or is it still to be continued? The Hammer connection is... It wouldn't surprise me if, I mean, neither of them are right now. The Hammer connection, I would expect to see sooner. Because, yeah, I guess there's, it's like, I'm not sure if I even want a vague guy the reason for that, but yeah, I guess the easier way to say that is, you're going downtown and Hammer has some connections with Midgard Corporate, so it would be reasonable he'd show up there. There's something suspicious pop up in the anime hall. Looks like someone's unloading laptops. You want to check the serial numbers on those? Actually, slightly funny / terrifying story about that. Liz, I may have mentioned before, is amazing and ridiculous. But the police came after a house was broken in on, and they left us with like a form to do the report, and it's like, if you've got, you know, serial numbers, list them out. Otherwise, you know, it's just, like, we can't find them realistically without the serial numbers. But, like, if you give us the serial numbers and anybody sells them to a pawn shop, we'll find it. Great. And so, Liz manages to get, like, all of them. Like, I mentioned, like, everything that got stolen, like, a couple of DSs, like, four laptops, the Wii U pad, the Nook. Like, I think the only things that she didn't have serial numbers for were the Nook and, like, maybe the older DS or something like that. Like, there were two things out of that whole list that she wasn't just like, oh yeah, here we go. And it's like, wow. I mean, part of that is sort of like, we're both a little bit pack ratty, so like, we had some of the boxes still around and stuff, which for Apple, for Macs, have serial numbers on them. But yeah, it was just like, here you go, have all of the serial numbers. So yeah, if anybody tries to sell them, we'll... the police will find out, and then hopefully they'll get all arrested and whatnot. Can we get I voted stickers for participating in Zach's House of Coin Rotation voting thing? That sounds delightful. I love the I voted stickers. As a side note, they're one of my favorite things. I'm pretty sure that they're the reason that Liz votes day of, is just to get the stickers. I mean, which isn't to say that she wouldn't vote otherwise, but she would vote absentee probably otherwise, because it just makes so much more sense on all levels. But I think that's probably all that I should talk about voting this election cycle. Does the Misty offices have more to offer us? I mean, I'm not quite sure what all people have found. I mean, there's some... the tendrils from the Misty offices do sort of extend a little bit further than you might immediately expect. And those can be a little bit interesting. The Zach voting is hard to find unless you know exactly where to look. Do you think making it more apparent would be out of order? I'm a little torn on that. On one hand, like, I mean, it's a function that's, you know, fairly important. But the flip side of that is that it is sort of like a pretty sort of esoteric bit of the game design. So yeah, it's worth thinking about, but I'm not entirely sure what direction that should go. Do you think maybe we were a bit quick to hype for cyberless conduct in Run? Shortly after it was added and we debugged a new way into the vaults that didn't involve cyber at all. Yeah, there's actually a couple of those. Like, I don't know, 3 or 4 or something. There's quite a few. But, yeah, I don't necessarily think that it needed to go in then, but people were pretty excited about it. And, hopefully, I mean, and going forward, you know, when you're talking downtown and stuff, like, there's going to be, I mean, like, the further we get beyond Old Town, the more the question of, you know, whether you'll have cyberware or not, it will have some pretty serious impact on the Run. And some questions from Argath. Hidden counters versus uncounted. Probably some unnecessary questions. Good to know. Argath, good to know. I guess we could stop here at an hour and a half, but we will bravely go where a few podcast threads have gone before. Hidden counters versus uncounted. There are a few areas where certain effects seem to trigger or even get noted in the event description, but they don't seem to do anything. Can I bother you to try to clarify some of those? I'm hoping that these are the things that follow, because otherwise I'll have no idea what you're talking about. Spectre Patient doesn't seem to respond to silver weapons, at least, and it's not easy taking him down with an anti-glitter opener. Is there a point to fighting him beyond getting the last meal? The Spectral Patient, the silver thing is not a general Spectre thing. The silver thing is specific to a certain type of specters. Is the last meal supposed to have any triggers associated with getting knocked out? I've not spotted any. I mean, I guess it would be kind of funny if you like ate it and it was the last thing you ate before you got knocked out. It did something fun. I don't think it does at present. But it would be funny. Alice feels break your bone with muscle surge. Take a lot of body. Sure, it's super steroid of some kind, but again, you've told us to look out for oddly expensive, painful things. Is it countered or uncounted? I don't think there's anything too crazy going on with that. Similar vein, megavitamins. One body per XP, which isn't horrible, but there doesn't seem to be an associated trigger like with orange juice. Are megavitamins somehow less vitamin-y than orange juice? A hidden counter, uncounted? I mean, the orange juice is a whole separate issue. But the megavitamins might have something hidden in them. Let me check before I say something that will send you looking for a rabbit hole that doesn't exist. It's really the best kind of rabbit hole. Man. Old. Good old item 80. No, but there have been a couple of requests to buff those, and since I was in there, I just buffed them a little bit. When you let the hipster student in the computer lab talk, he burns himself out and settles down to do some coding. Later on, he says he no longer needs a cheat sheet, but you can't give him cheat sheets while he's working. Hidden tutor or teacher skill or just flavor text? I think that's just flavor. Veering off slightly, what's the secret that's not discovered yet in Metroplex? You're amazed we haven't discovered yet. Be as vague as you want. Code names probably are best. There is one that I don't want to say that I'm amazed exactly, because, like, I've sort of, like, spent time, like, hanging up arrows, pointing at it, like, oh, hey, look at this thing. Pay attention to this thing. It's a cool thing. And people are like, wow, Kinect thinks that this is, like, a funny running joke or something. But it's, like, not really a running joke at all. Well, it's sort of become a running joke because, like, I've put up so many things pointing to it that now it's just kind of funny to me. So I guess it's sort of, like, retroactively become a running joke, almost. But, yeah, it's, it makes me happy. What's your most anticipated discovery that we've missed so far? That one's definitely up there. But there's... There's definitely some narrative stuff hidden in a particular quite old item that really, if once it's discovered, assuming it's interpreted properly, there's actually a lot of like really meaty backstory stuff that's just sort of like waiting out there. That I have to, like, periodically check and make sure that I'm not contradicting, because it's just not on the wiki or anything. There's a question that I got last time that I'm not sure if I answered correctly, that this reminded me of. There have been several times where people have asked me if there are Easter eggs. There is one very specific thing that is 100% an Easter egg. That I always forget about when people ask that question. There is one actual honest-to-God Easter egg that is a reference to two awesome things, or possibly a reference to an awesome thing that was also referencing a third awesome thing. but I just need to get that out there. It's not, like, important or anything. It's just, like, I thought that it was funny, so I put it in, but there is actually an Easter egg. Okay. Whew. All right. We have Halloween coming up and Christmas. Any other world events coming up? I'd appreciate a warning so I'm not mid-run. No, I mean, with Halloween and Christmas, I mean, that's got our sort of world event listing. I would like... This is probably unlikely, but we'll see what happens. I would like to actually start working on some downtown stuff and before year end. And that will take a path very similar to the Old Town stuff, but we'll take way longer, because there is a lot of shit downtown. If you could just go downtown right now and see the sights, you'd be like, Jesus Christ, this is gonna take forever. And you're not wrong. well, you in the alternate reality that you actually have any information to judge on whether you'd be wrong is not wrong. So yeah, leaning very strongly on the old town approach of rolling it out piecemeal, but like I want to get started on that because there are a lot of pieces that have to go in. But at the same time, there's a bunch of stuff that I'd like to still plug into Old Town, and like the Mafia thing I was talking about, and all of this stuff. I mean, other places where there probably should be Mafia stuff should include like the docks, because that's kind of like how that goes, and so forth. But yeah. Anyway. So probably no other world events, but at some point, I would say, realistically, February. Which I say because January tends to do a number on me. I have a note in my calendar that says, make sure you're ready for January. In, like, mid-December, or somewhere like that. And I'm not sure if it's, like, crashing after, like, sprinting through, you know, Halloween and Christmas and all of this stuff, or if it's, like, because, I mean, November I tend to be a bit of a slug for the first part of it because of Halloween, but, like, or if it's, like, seasonal affective disorder or, like, whatever. But or if holidays are just terrible. Not in, like, the in-game sense. Like, I actually like the in-game holidays, but, like, real holidays involve dealing with family. And, like, I'm mostly okay with my family, but, like, the obligation to deal with people, like, family or not, is not my favorite thing in the world. Anyway, I'm not sure why January suck, but January suck. So I would assume, like, realistic assumptions probably, like, February starts seeing the beginning of downtown stuff, but, like, I'm not even gonna begin to guess when that'll actually be done. Like, there'll probably be quite a bit of Old Town reset to go before everything switches over to downtown. Because, yeah, there's a lot of areas, and a lot of, like, interconnecting quest bits, and a lot of, actually, probably some new, at least pseudo-contacts, if not actual contacts. We'll see how those actually play out. But a lot of new people that you get to meet, and ally with, or kill, or whatever. Yeah, actually, there's a lot of, the list of named people that you can kill will probably expand pretty substantially with downtown, now that I think about it. But yeah. Anyway. What was I... I was trying to talk about world events. Wow, just... hour and a half, and I still can't stop rambling. Also, happy birthday! I'd offer cake, but virtual cake is very limited in deliciousness. While the, Twilight Heroes gets, dice cream cake, which... you did not mishear. It is, in fact, cake made out of super-chilled dice and cream, and is apparently delicious. I mean, it says it right in the description, so... I mean, I can even use superlatives. This year's was Black Forest dice cream cake, which sounds pretty good, actually. I mean, like, except for the part where you probably bite down on dice and they hurt your teeth. But, like, really, you know, dice deserved it. Well, it seems that we are going to wrap up before 2 hours, which is probably for the best. It was nice chatting and answering your questions. And got some good ideas of stuff that I should plug into various places. And hopefully you have some ideas of what's coming up soon. And yeah, thanks for asking questions and for playing and for donating, and particularly if you pitched into the GoFundMe or just, you know, were like, oh, shit, Kinect needs some help, let me stockpile some unearthly coins, whatever. I appreciate it a great deal. And hopefully we'll use this shiny new laptop to get some updates out soon. And I will see you next time.